Do it.
Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for September 25th, 2011. I'm David McLaughlin back on the Kudzu Vine, and I want to thank Tim Shiflett and Catherine Smith for filling in so ably for me, and Wendy Davis for coming in and guest hosting. But Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome back. We're glad to have you back.
Certainly. I've missed in a while. Welcome back, Tim.
Good evening. Always glad to welcome you back after a sojourn, David.
Oh, y'all did a great job. And, of course, my visit to the Georgia Dome was fruitful, too. I have much to do with it, but they won. So that was good. And, of course, I paid for it all week long, getting you back to Rome at $2.50. The traffic in that what used to be called the Pigeonhole, and I think newer Atlantans call it the Gulch, is just dreadful. And I actually saw a movie on like HBO, some movie where these two people get custody of this child that was their friend's, and they actually filmed part of that movie with a baby in the Pigeonhole. I just couldn't imagine keeping an infant in anything like the Pigeonhole for more than 5 minutes if you had to. But I digress. People come to listen for politics, not weird Atlanta areas talk. But speaking of weird Atlanta happenings, it was in Florida, but Herman Cain, the truck stop pizza magnate, won a straw poll in Florida in which, you know, all the major candidates participated. For a little bit of time, Herman Cain had caught a little fire, but that's been months ago. Tim, what in the world is going on where this guy can still win anything?
Well, you know, the talk, David, had been not anything about Herman Cain. He was off the page and the flavor of the month and this and that and the other. And the talk was, how bad was Perry going to beat Romney down there? Well, Perry only beat Romney by 1 point, and Cain beat Perry by 22 points. We'll get more into the debate, I know, in a minute. I think that might have had something to do with it. And his assertion that children of illegal immigrants, you know, with all of that, I guarantee you this. Some Republicans, I know, but I'm talking to some, are, you know, they're not really sold on Rick Perry as the guy. I'd say a good third of Republicans by now still looking for a candidate, and I think that race is in a tizzy, don't you, Catherine?
I do. I think that I know they always say that the road to the White House is runs through Florida, and mm-hmm. I think that Rick Perry's comments about immigration and immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
Social Security are killing him in Georgia. I mean, in Florida. I think it's, you know, I think the immigration thing is a big piece of it, but I think Social Security, because we know there's a lot of senior citizens who live in Florida, and senior citizens tend to vote more, you know, percentage-wise, they tend to vote. And I think that his comments on Social Security are bound to affect his standing with seniors, and I think plus he's just not performing very well in those debates. We'll talk about that, like Tim said, in a minute. But I think the shine's off the coin, or whatever they say. I don't think he's the bright shiny object that he was when he first came in. I think. He's dulled a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, well, David, you saw in the story that every last winner of this straw poll that when it's ever been taken has gone on to win the Republican nomination. What in the world is up now?
Well, I mean, Herman Cain's got to use this. Guys, y'all went off and took this into the Perry discussion. We weren't there yet. We got to give Herman his due. It's so weird because obviously some of these straw polls, you know, you can do a little something to win them, and you might not win a real primary, a real caucus. But you have to have some people with some political skill to at least get a straw poll victory. I didn't even think he had the organization at this point to do that.
No.
And then you add to it, I think Shel Bachman fights for a lot of that super, super crazy vote with Kane. And so this is kind of a blow to Shel Bachman, I think, as well.
Catherine was right, David. I think this is a blowback vote, if ever there was one. See, I don't believe Herman Cain has all this organization down there. I don't think any of us believe that. There's something more going on here. This is a blowback vote. This is a message vote. This was a mad delegates vote.
Yeah, that's what I think.
They had to pick somebody,
like, though.
No, why
would they? We don't like Rick Perry, and I think, you know, I've said it over and over, I just don't think Mitt Romney has he just doesn't have whatever that it is to be the nominee. I mean, it's a combination of him being kind of dull, but also sort of the package with the, you know, sort of the accusations of flip-flopping and the Mormon, and there's just too many things against him, even though he should really be he really is probably the most likely to be able to beat President Obama, I think.
Yep.
That's my sense. But I don't think he's the right fit for the current Republican primary voter and caucus voter.
No, I agree with you there. He's not a good fit for their party, and that's why he's struggling. Now, as far as Perry, if you look at Florida, some of the immigration comments, now you probably have some, you know, like particularly Cuban voters that might not be so offended by those, and that's a key piece of the Republican Party in Florida. But then, of course, the Ponzi scheme comments, that may be huge in Florida, given votes with seniors. And of course, then if Perry, who seemed like he would do well in certain senses, were the nominee, he'd begin to have trouble with some of those seniors that seem like they are less likely to vote for President Obama because, you know, here's Perry hitting them in their pocketbook. So this could become a very interesting dynamic. If the Republicans try to play electability, they may not know exactly what the best fit is, and then or do they just go with their heart? Further complicating this whole thing, Michigan had a straw poll. Mitt Romney won it, which he apparently mm-hmm. has Michigan ties from his father, George. But did y'all mm-hmm. see who finished second among Tea Party backers? That, again, was Herman Cain. Catherine, I think since you're from Michigan, you should get the first stab at this. Herman Cain is popular in the South and the North in the same week, particularly with Tea Party backers.
I think that he is pretty good at he's a little bit captivating. You know, he was a businessman. Everybody, the Republicans always are drawn to these businessmen for some reason. And I think that, you know, people in Michigan are very frustrated. They're really being hit hard by the economic downturn and the unemployment. And maybe his, you know, 999 plan and his, you know, sort of out-of-the-box ideas about economics and stuff, maybe that appeals to them. Maybe they feel like, okay, you know, now this other stuff is working. Maybe this guy's got something. I don't know. I can't really speak for all my former Michigan, especially my Republican voting former Michigan neighbors, but I knew Mitt Romney would win because Romney's like a you know, icon.
Yeah, the name. Tim, basically, a first and a second for a guy with no money, with no elective experience. Well, what do we make of this?
Well, here's what I'm making of it right now. If anything in politics has been predictable historically, especially in recent elections, it has been the fact that the Republicans have always lined up their ducks, and they have anointed a front runner pretty early in the process. Sometimes that front runner would stagger, but generally that front runner would stagger on to the finish line. That's not happening this year.
No.
They are a party in flux. I don't know if it's the addition of the Tea Party people or if it's the fact that they got pounded so badly in the last general election or the fact that they turned around and won so big with this new influence in the recent congressional elections, but that is a party that seems to be searching right now for a standard bearer for the party soul that the party is also searching for right now. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, certainly. You know, they got to be happy, but they want to win because that's
right.
Ultimately the only thing that's going to make them happy. So they
right.
got to serve two masters, if you will, because there is part of that base, you know, the crowd that, you know, George Bush was too much to the left for them. And we're certainly talking about George W. Bush. I mean, and if you told that to the average American, they'd be like, what? That's crazy talk. And so there's, you know, two things to try to balance here, and it's a pretty tight needle to thread. Well, let's get into some of this Perry talk because he is the front runner lately, and there's been debate after debate, of course, on Saturday Night Live. They're mocking how many there's been. Everybody's been trying to get in on it, whether it's Google or YouTube or the Tea Party Express. Honestly, I think if the Kudzu Vine wanted to hold a GOP debate, we might could get two or three of them to show up. you know, national contenders.
That's an idea.
Yeah,
that's
I don't know. We get the co-sponsor with us, but we could probably try, and at least Catherine with her Michigan connections could get us Thaddeus McCarter.
There we go.
Oh, wait,
yeah,
we
well,
missed
I'm
out
thing.
On that one.
Yeah.
He's out. He's out of the race. So we should have struck a few days ago. But nevertheless, there's all these debates, and this is bad for Rick Perry because it seems like every time he shows up, he somehow sticks his foot in his mouth. Seems to get tired at times. Also, just doesn't look very bright when he's debating.
Catherine, no, he doesn't.
Is this going to be the undoing, the Achilles heel of Rick Perry?
It could be, but it could also be a benefit. It could work in his favor. You know, he could say, you know, they could argue something along the line, well, he's not, you know, he's a good old guy, and he's not that good in front of the camera, but look at all the good things he's done in Texas, and if people will buy that, you know, medicine, then, you know, I've got some acreage for them to buy somewhere. But I think it could work in his favor if they play it right, but I don't think they will. I think I think you're right. I think he gets tired or he gets frustrated. And we know how that sort of intolerance for questions or for that impatience, it doesn't play well in these debates. People don't like that. You know, they want the candidate that is patient and understands the questions and answers them well. And even people who might not be looking for the smartest candidate, they want someone who's able to answer those questions. So I think there's a nuance they could play it, but I don't think they will be successful in doing that.
Well, Catherine, just changing that one word, you know, he might could have a whole song and campaign slogan, just a good old guy, never meaning no harm, and you know, kind of Dukes of Hazzard used to be, you know, from way back when. But you know, and that's honestly the truth. They can be like, debating doesn't matter, and Tim, I'll let you have your first stab at this before I give a larger point that I see happening on the road. Tim, what do you make of Rick Perry and his lack of debating skills?
Well, I watched the debate, the whole thing. Yeah, I know I'm a glutton for punishment. Y'all can beat me later. Perry was horrid. I'm sorry, there's no other way to put it. And I'm trying to be as neutral about this as I can. I don't have a dog in that hunt, of course, but he staggered all over the block. Mitt Romney, who was standing right there by him, was actually smirking and ridiculing him. Santorum absolutely pummeled him on that immigration thing. He just looked off. That's got to hurt him, David. It's got to hurt him. The crowd turned on him like a wildcat when he said that children of illegal immigrants should have, you know, if necessary, government assistance and access to advanced educational opportunities in the state of Texas and anywhere else. And the Fox announcers were even trying to settle the crowd down after that. It was a terrible, terrible mistake. And, you know, that's just not something that they're going to forget. He might be in a little bit of trouble. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you got to remember, if you're a person like Rick Santorum and you got, what, 10 kids, then you might get less sensitive about immigration issues more than the rest of us because, you know, there literally might not be enough room for everybody if everybody had 10 kids like Rick Santorum.
David, the point is, it don't matter who did it to Perry. Perry gave him the opening, and Santorum just tore into it. The big one
and it didn't seem to hit him much. Santorum, I mean, he may have to be the hit man, but then somebody else is going to get the benefit of it, like
Romney.
You would have to think it'd be Romney. Maybe that's an opening for Bachman, possibly. Somebody. And in this case, I guess, what we've seen this week, that's a little bit of opening for Herman Cain.
Yeah, there we go.
For what it is. But it just seems to be this big thing. Here's the point. It kind of worries me for our democracy. But Republicans typically don't do as well in the debates as Democrats. I mean, John Kerry, pretty much any observer will tell you he was 3-0. The president, current President Obama, he did better than John McCain in the debates. Even the vice presidential debates. I mean, Al Gore would, you know, usually soundly defeat whoever he went up against. And the Republicans generally don't do very well in these debates. Do y'all see that there could be a point where Republicans just say, maybe we just don't do debates. We just say, hey, they're not important. They're a thing of the past, and we just don't play in that sphere. And to me, that's not necessarily I mean, it's a sad thing for our party because we seem to have an advantage, but it's an even sadder thing for democracy. Do you think the Republicans could make that strategic move and not have a big blowback, Catherine?
Well, I think that there's always a challenge to negotiate, you know, how many debates and, you know, where they're going to be and all that. I could see them easily saying, you know, limiting. Now, we're talking about debates in the general or debates in the primary?
The general, yeah, because in the primary, it doesn't matter because, the winner and the loser will always be Republican. You know, so it had to be the general debates is the one where they want to limit it.
I think it would not surprise me if they tried to do that. I think they would get some severe blowback, and I think it would be very hard to negotiate that. But it wouldn't surprise me for them to, you know, I think they've always tried to limit the number of debates. And I just want to point out something that, while I agree with you 100% that Kerry won, was 3-0 for those debates, there were a lot of people who thought that Bush won at least two of them. So I think it's a lot of it is perception.
Well,
I remember waking up after those debates and going, wow, Kerry did great last night, and watching the news, well, George Bush had a sounding win in the debate last night. So
this is where I say who wins and loses. CNN in particular, but other groups will do it too. They'll have focus groups of undecided voters. And I remember clearly the undecided voters watching, hearing none of the spin doctors from either side, sat there and felt Kerry won those debates. And so
okay,
I think that group is a pretty good judge because they, like Kim said earlier, they don't have a dog in the fight. They haven't picked one yet. And, you know, if these people are genuinely undecided, then they're going to come to this conclusion. And they usually do a pretty good job of finding people that have generally voted Republican, who generally voted Democratic, kind of seem to vote for winners every time and flip back and forth. So that's my criterion there.
Okay, okay, that's a really good criteria. But I do remember the spin doctors, you know, claiming that Bush was winning. Anyway.
They get paid to do that.
Well, that's true. But,
yeah, they get paid to say that.
I do think that, I mean, I think it would be very hard to get to the point where we have no debates, but I do think they could limit the number of them and the location and the time and the format to make it more advantageous. Well, not necessarily more advantageous, but just not as easy for people to see it. You know, like,
well, and you know, Bush team would always try. Yeah, they would always try to limit the number of debates. But now, to actually say we're not going to have any, you know, that's the criterion. They're not really debating with the Democratic Party at that point. They're debating with the perception of the American people as far as talking with ideas. You know, there's obviously a way you can go too far on someone. It's just like redistricting. You can go too far. At a certain point, then the American people will say, these people don't believe in democracy. Tim, get in on here on this. Do you think they can limit debates to none?
Yeah, sure they can. Nixon did it in 68, albeit with a special set of circumstances. Humphrey chased him all over the country, trying to debate him across country, like in that Salt Lake City speech in September of 68. Nixon almost blew the election, I think, as a result of not debating. Or it could be a deal where, like in 1988, Roger Ailes sits down with Dukakis's people, and because he knows that his candidate is well ahead, and he says, here's our proposal, take it or leave it. And Dukakis's people said, we'll take it.
Yeah, and of course Dukakis did very poor in the debate, because usually sometimes these things go to memorable sound bites, and the most memorable sound bite was a negative one on his part. Even though he was trying to explain a pretty nuanced point, one that's hard to do in a quick answer. But I mean, I just
think
see the
this
point
year,
where,
though.
Yeah,
this
I mean,
year.
Just
this year, though, or next year, David, I think there will be ample debates because the Republicans are challenging an incumbent president.
Yeah, but if you have Kerry as the nominee, you have to know that intellectually, as far as debating, a law professor, debating a guy who's done this multiple times.
That can work two ways, too. It can blow up in Perry's face, or he can go into the debate with no expectations, and if he doesn't fall flat of his face, it is perceived as a victory of sorts.
And that's
you're
exactly
right,
what happened with Bush and Gore. That's what happened with Bush and Gore.
Yeah, the expectations game, he'll have that going in his favor because the expectations will be nil. But, of course, if he keeps performing so badly, then he may not even get to make it to the second round, if you will, the general. Well, Tim, we kind of alluded to redistricting and going too far. That kind of segues pretty nicely into your outrage of the week. When you're ready, take it away.
All right, David, appreciate it. I heard Steve Henson speak at a political dinner last night. Most of you who listen to us in Georgia would know who that is. He's the Democratic leader in our state Senate here. You know that little hardy band of 20 souls fighting the good but often hopeless fight down there. Now, let me qualify that by saying that what they advocate and believe in isn't all hopeless, of course. I actually think a lot of people in this state would agree with our state senators and their positions on a lot of the issues. But unfortunately, the hopeless part of this thing enters the picture when we just talk about sheer numbers. The Republicans so outnumber the Democrats in the state Senate that quite often the Democrats are never even able to be heard from. And on the rare occasion that they actually get something out there for public consumption, then no one, and in particular, the Republicans under the Gold Dome are even paying any attention. Now, the latest example of this new era of nonpartisanship has manifested itself this year in what turned out to be Senator Henson's main topic last night, and that would be reapportionment. We all know the story by now, and all over the country, really. This little teabagger revolt that we had last year produced some very sobering results at the polls, and at the worst possible time, of course, just in time, to manipulate the census to ensure safe future elections for the winning side, to put it bluntly. But now, unlike some others, I accept election results. I've learned that in a lot of years. I understand they have consequences. I know that to the victors go the spoils. I know all of that. The Republicans won, and in states where the law allows it, they get to totally pretty much control the game. Had the Democrats won, then it would have been their game. We've seen that before. So you might say to me, okay, Tim, where's your outrage? Well, I'm so glad you asked. I'll be just delighted to share that with you. And right now, Senator Henson talked about this at length last night. Our co-host on this very show, Catherine, had made mention of it as well. And that is this so-called process by which it all went down. We saw, as the Republicans announced that there would be public hearings all over the state, that would be welcome. Everyone would be welcome to come and contribute, you know, their valuable input. Yeah, I heard about some of that input. A person signed up, spoke for 3 minutes. I did hear about a couple of suggestions from Republicans at some of these meetings that received a little attention. I heard of not one Democratic voice being raised that made any difference. I, for one, never was under any illusion that anything any Democrat said at one of these meetings would affect anything. And yes, I have heard what Mitch Sebal, the Republican state senator who oversaw this process, said, something about stupid forms that were sent to all state senators to fill out regardless of party, and how that proved that Democrats were included in the process. No, Senator, they were just included in your little game. It was never a process. I wouldn't have filled out your stupid form either. I'm glad no Democratic senator did turn one in by your appointed hour. These hearings were a spectacle, carefully produced and edited for public consumption. The appearance of fairness was the idea. Fairness was never in the mix. The Republican idea of fair was exactly what the Democratic idea of fairness was a decade ago, to be honest. I've been around politics actively since before some of the present powers that be down there were born, if I want to give my age away. I've been around long enough to see just about every trick, angle, and dog pony show that either party can conjure. So don't even thank anyone about telling me that there was anything fair about this or that it was ever intended to be. Because that's what really bothers me about stuff like this. I was annoyed when some in my party tried to portray those ridiculous maps in 2001 as fair and equitable. I am just as offended now that the other side would do the same. And you know what they say? Well, they say that they are fair because it could have been worse. Really? How is that? Looks like an attempt to permanently make us a one-party state to me. Did I miss something else? You know what I want? All I want anyone to do is just say it. These maps were drawn before the fact with no changes forthcoming once they were made public. Just say it. These hearings were a farce. with no specific maps or anything available to debate. As a matter of fact, there was no debate. Just say that. These maps on the legislative level had but one purpose only, and that was to ensure supermajorities for the party in power for the foreseeable future. How about saying that? These maps drawn this year were in no way any different from their predecessors in 10 years ago. Say that. It's true. Not one little change was made in either year because of either input or complaint from the other side. Say it. There was actually bragging about how the maps were made public before the vote. Yeah, on a Friday right before the vote. Not one change made to the maps. It was a round job. Say it. A law firm was hired to help, and Democrats were given no access to this firm. Say it. The Carl Vinson Institute was kicked out of the process so that there would be no way that these maps would be anything except totally controlled by a few. Say it. The congressional maps were drawn with the idea of making Congressman Barrett check on moving van rates. Say it. Just say it. Goodness. Don't give an old political hack like me any nonsense. And while you're at it, admit one thing. The last four maps at the dawn of each decade have all gone to the court system. So too will this one. Why do I know this? Simple. Because every last Democrat in both houses voted against this total farce. That's why. The Justice Department that some of you teabaggers would like to get rid of pays attention to things like that. So just say that. This isn't over yet. And blowbacks, oh, they do happen. Because you see, what happened 10 years ago provides no excuse or plausible reason to do the same now. So say what you're doing, Republicans. Just say it. Don't talk about that. And say this too, by the way. You provided me, once again, with an ample reason to write another outrage, something I'm sure you'll do again many times in the future, David.
Yeah, Tim, I mean, you're absolutely right that this thing is just, it's something about it's not right. I mean, obviously they can draw the lines to their favor. They'd be crazy not to, but the way that they manipulated race to me is the thing that makes it, you know, so wrong. And then, you know, even some of the more wiser people in their party are, you know, wanting to kind of nuance it a little bit. I mean, we had Charlie Harper on here a few weeks. He kind of nuanced it. Now, I usually really like listening to Charlie, but he wasn't to me the proudest thing he's ever said, if you will. Catherine, your thoughts on Tim's outrage?
Well, very well said, Tim. And, you know, I'm just disgusted by the whole thing myself. And the one thing that I'm, you know, happy about is that all our Democrats, you know, are unified in their opposition. And hopefully that's a you know, hint to future unity in the in our legislators. But it's just been a very discouraging process. You know, like you said, I did go to one of those hearings, and it was just, you know, laughable. The whole thing was laughable. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, how the process moves forward with the Justice Department and any court battles and all that kind of stuff. But it is still very discouraging. It's sort of a black eye on our ability to be, to, you know, I often say this, like, okay, once, you know, you may run as a Republican, you may run as a Democrat, but once you're elected, you represent all of us. I even said that when George Bush was president, even though he disappointed me on a daily basis, he was still my president. So for these guys to get it, I mean, I know, you know, you're right, you know, elections have their consequences, all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, they're supposed to represent everyone in Georgia, and they clearly do not. And that's the very disappointing truth of the matter.
Yeah. Well, Catherine, I think you're right about the people that are elected represent us, although might have to tell Cleburne, Texas Mayor
Justin Hewlett, because this past week he was quoted as saying, I want people that live in my district to represent me. He's not serving you. You're serving him. I just happened to see that quote about the spotty and sent it to y'all. It's something that I don't think it really is topic worthy, but it's kind of funny. I'm sure it was a flip of the tongue that never ends up looking like he's doing less service to the people than the people in his district. I'm sure they'll come back to haunt him. Well, this past elections, they had so much different information on the West Virginia governor's race, and this is a special election, but since it's taken place near when the general election would be, it seems more just like an odd year general governor's race. But Earl Ray Tomlin is the acting governor, and he is leading in the polls. His competitor in the race, the fellow
we're having a hard time hearing you, David.
David, we're not hearing you at all, buddy. Are you with us? Catherine, it would appear that we have lost David. we'll just take up the talk until David can somehow get back with us. We were talking about a subject that we haven't talked about a lot that he said we should really hit on again, and that's this West Virginia governor's race, as I hear David still trying to get in there. David, you're not coming through at all, buddy.
Personally, I don't know about you, Catherine, but I've been watching this race a little bit, and I just think it's pretty much in the bag. If any Democratic governor's race is in the bag any time in the near future besides Kentucky, I think it's this one. And he has a good lead. He has lots of money. And what do you think? Don't you think he's got it about wrapped up?
Yeah, but, I hate to say that. I agree with you, but I'm always cautious to say anything's wrapped up, especially with Democrats these days. But it does look like, like you said, he's got plenty of money. He seems to be leading the polls. He's, apparently the voters are happy with him. There was a little thing where he came to Georgia. I guess he owned the what's the guy's name who's running against him? I can't remember. Anyway.
I can't remember his name either.
I don't have it up on my iPad here. I thought I did, but I don't. But he, whatever his name is, owns apparently a summer home in Georgia. And he came here to raise money, and he raised a few thousand dollars, which seems shocking since most candidates come to Georgia and use it like an ATM machine, both Republicans and Democrats. So, if you can't even raise money in Georgia, then I think that's an indicative of something.
That's the part that makes me wonder if maybe this bad boy isn't really drifting toward being over. When in doubt, look at the money. The money never lies. It would seem to me that if this guy had a chance, a real genuine chance to win this race, that there would be a bunch of money flowing into his coffers. And as you just, said, it ain't coming. It's a long way from West Virginia down to Georgia. I've been to West Virginia from Georgia, and it is a darn long way to come and to leave with less than $10,000. He could have gone over to D.C. much closer and probably panhandled that on the street in front of the congressional offices. And instead, he does this. So I'm just not seeing where this race right now is a race. I understand what you're saying, that we don't say never, but still, I got to feel good about one. Besides Kentucky, I've got to feel pretty good about this one. David, are you back with us yet, buddy? No, David.
Well, the guy's name is Bill Maloney, and for a rundown of the money, Governor Tomlin has raised almost $600,000, $565,000, and Maloney has raised $127,000. So we all know how important money is, and the money, the race for the money is often, unfortunately, you know, in some cases, very indicative of a winner. It looks like if money talks, then we've got Tomlin walking
in
the governor's office.
In an era where governor's races cost multiple millions of dollars,
what's
this guy going to do with $100,000? He can't get up a decent media campaign. I'm not sure he could buy enough yard signs to cover the state with $100,000. I don't know what the guy could really do. And Tomlin's poll numbers are good. He's pretty popular up there. So, David, you might have wanted to make an issue out of this, buddy, but I'm going to have to nix you, especially when you're off the air. So, another thing I wanted to jump to, Catherine, was in this same little story from our friends at Coast, there was some talk about the 12th district.
Yep.
And what has been done in reapportionment with John Barra, and what are your thoughts on him? Is he really, really in big trouble?
I think he's in big trouble.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't like to. I'm sure that the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, will try to help him. I know Congressman John Lewis is, you know, very supportive of Congressman Barrow, and he's going to try to help him, from what I understand. And I'm sure that Congressman Barrow will have help from people around the country, his fellow congressmen. And but that district is going to be very tough for him to win. First of all, I don't think he even lives in it anymore, which is not against the law. I mean, he can still run, but it's sort of a it's tricky, you know, because he lives in Savannah, and Savannah's no longer in the district. And then also, you know, there are a fair amount of, you know, the, you know, more progressive members of the Democratic Party who are not happy with Congressman Barrow about some of his voting, and you know, he's one of the blue dogs, and so I'm not sure how much support he might get sort of across the board from Democrats. I mean, I think every Democrat wants to have a Democrat in a seat, but, you know, it takes more than wanting it to, you know, get a lot of volunteers and a lot of money and all that, all the things that are going to be necessary for him to be able to prevail.
You know, I was going to throw in something here to you, too. You know, we had talked a whole lot before we actually saw what shape the congressional maps were ever going to take. You and I both had perhaps thought that if the Republicans were going to go after one or the other, either him or Bishop, it would certainly be him.
Well, because he's white.
Right, because of the voter rights thing. And because it would be just, you know, as a white candidate, it would be very, very easy to pull large swaths of African-American voters out of his district and disperse them without getting the Justice Department Santana race, which is exactly what they've done. So if I were the Republicans, I would have picked exactly the Democrat that they targeted to beat, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think it plays to their to a couple of their wishes, I guess. That's to dilute the white performance in the Democratic Party. I think that's one of their goals, is to make the Democratic Party in Georgia appear to be predominantly African American. I think that's one of their goals. I'm sure it's not written down anywhere, but that's clearly what they're trying to do. And then also use the Voting Rights Act to protect them from doing so. So I think, yeah, it makes perfect sense. And plus, I'm sure they know that John Barrow isn't, Congressman Barrow isn't all that popular with some of the, you know, like the Metro Atlanta liberals are not crazy about him. And so they it gives them, you know, it's further help to not getting him reelected. You know what I mean? Like it's, I mean, if you try to do something like that to Congressman Lewis, everybody and their brother would be on, you know, trying to fight against it. But because
I'd be on the bus down there to join you guys over there. let me give you a quick update, and then we'll just continue with our discussion. I did get an email from David a second ago, and it says he's called back, and it shows that he's on. Can we not hear him? What I think we're hearing in the background is the little scratch and stuff. I know you hear it. And that's David trying to talk, and apparently he just can't get through to us. So we may have to do this. You know, folks out there, this is live, and this sort of thing happens, and so it looks like it's happening to us this very night. So we're going to move, while we're hoping David can get back with us, to the great old state of Texas, and a public policy poll, our old buddy, who's been on here several times now, Tom Jensen, did this poll. And it shows that Republicans, really to no one's surprise, are in pretty good shape out there in Texas. That's one state where Republicans outnumber Democrats by about 8%, according to the polling data. Chad Edwards, of course, is our best candidate. And according to the polling data, we're seeing he probably loses by 8 to 10 points to the Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst. Would you agree that Texas is going to be some pretty tough sledding, Catherine?
Oh, yeah. But, you know, it has been for a while. You know.
Yeah, it has.
They breed some serious Republicans over there.
Yeah, they did. Well, you know, they keep saying, people keep telling us, oh, Texas is going to turn purple, this and that and the other. I would love to believe that. There is nothing I would love to believe more, but I just don't see it. Do you?
No, I think, I think there's little pockets. There's Austin and, you know, there's little pockets of progressive and Democrats. But as a state, I think it's a very conservative state and it's very large. So it has a big impact, you know, sort of because it's so large. But it seems, you know, I've never been there. I've never been to Texas.
Yeah.
I've never really been interested in going to Texas.
Well,
but
guess,
you know, there is LBJ. You know, we did.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I guess Texas is to the Republicans now what California is to us. You know, in the days when LBJ ruled the roost in the state of Texas, and they used to call the speaker's chair the Boston-Austin connection, either the Speaker of the House came from Massachusetts or Texas forever. California in those days was a very competitive state. I mean, they produced Ronald Reagan for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Richard Nixon. They used to win a lot of elections out there, the Republicans did, and now they can't win an election in California to save their life. Of course,
oh,
I'd rather have nearly, yeah.
Oh, there's some Republicans out there.
Was that you, David?
I figured out a new way to skin a cat, if you will. I'm now a guest on the show, and we have no host moderating, but amazingly, it looks like we can keep going.
All right. Live radio. I love it. Go
well,
ahead.
We'd like to welcome our new guest, David McLaughlin, from Rome, Georgia.
David, we're down.
I'll take whatever I can get.
David, we're talking about the Senate race in Texas and how kind of hopeless it looks to me in Texas. What do you think?
Yeah, and I tell you what, I hope I haven't brought the echoing back with me. Texas is just a state that, you know, we talk to our friends from Bernard's Report, and they tell us that as far as underneath in the state house and the state senate races, that they do some growing, and they figured out how to win at that level, which is pretty impressive. But in the statewide races, they don't hold a single statewide office, and they hadn't held a statewide office since about 98. I mean, we're talking a decade plus of not holding a statewide office, and then these polls are showing that it's going to be hard. And, of course, if, you know, if Rick Perry were to be the nominee, then you'd think that would make Texas and, you know, retrench a little further into Republicanism for state pride, which when it comes to state pride, I don't know that anybody can challenge Texas with all their don't mess with Texas. I mean, I don't know that anybody's looking to mess with any of the 50 states, but we said that fear.
David, we also talked about, and we've talked about this on this show, the fact that a lot of people keep trying to tell us, including so a lot of good guests we have on here, that Texas is turning purple. But I think Catherine and I both decided that Texas was the Republican version of California. Should we go that far?
Yeah, I mean, because they're both big states, and if one party or the other could figure out how to win both, it'd be pretty much game over. I mean, you take one way and flip it the other, you know, you're done, if you will. So I think that's where some of that comes from. But, yeah, I guess we're ready to move on maybe to another topic after this one. And I know y'all did a good job talking about the West Virginia governor's race. And this transportation poll that was on the front of the AJC, since it's good to actually talk about issues and not – horse race 24/7. You know, we seem to, you know, we like the horse race stuff, so we'll be a little substantive. And this poll shows that overall voters, and you know, are somewhat interested in the transportation tax, but Democrats are more interested than Republicans. And at the same time, this poll comes out, the new hot lanes will open just in a week or two, and actually, it looks like a lot of Republicans are starting to really come out against the hot lanes, where it's basically a pay HOV lane, if you will, saying you can, if you have money, you don't have to carpool. You can get in the far left lanes, you know, to go further. And, of course, they're saying now that's probably going to increase traffic on everybody else that doesn't have the money. And, of course, you're doing this in a bad economy to boot. And so this, again, could be another opening possibly for Democrats to say, look, this is a party that's been in power, you know, over 10 years by the time the next election comes up, and what have they done on transportation? Catherine, you're down there with it, although I get the sense you don't go on the expressway as much as you do on the regular streets of Atlanta, but you still experience it more than Tim and I do.
I may not go on the expressways very often, but my business is on the, you know, we're on the expressways all the day long making deliveries and pickups, and two of our employees live quite far away, and they suffer in traffic, you know, they're late because of traffic often. So, no, I have a big stake in this transportation situation, and I thought, you know, when I first heard about these hot lanes, I thought it was ridiculous to charge people, and the range is really, you know, it can be anywhere from like 50 cents to drive in the lane to $6, depending on how far you go and what the traffic is. And they've been talking about a lot on NPR in the morning, and I listen usually, and there doesn't seem to be any they seem to be really downplaying this increase in traffic in the rest of the lanes, because now you have to have three people in the car, whereas with the HOV lanes, it was only two. So all those people who used to drive in the HOV lanes with two people are now going to be forced into the regular lanes to, you know, open them up for the three people or more, or the people who are paying. So I think it's kind of a boondoggle. I think it's easy for people to say, oh, well, you just have to pay this much. But if you're paying $6 a day to get to work faster, and plus, you know, whatever the cost of gas is, I mean, that could be a potentially large increase in the expense, your expenses for transportation. I would have much preferred that they spent some money on more mass transit and those kind of things, but, you know, they didn't ask me.
Well, and Elizabeth, you're a citizen, you're a voter. They should ask you. They should ask all of us and listen. And to me, another thing, the way they changed the high, the HOV part of this, at least they could have said, hey, you can still use the HOV lanes the way you've always used them. We're just going to add this component too. And obviously, since, you know, you'd have to actually, I guess, have some type of mechanism to pay to get over there, then you would have to have two live living people, not one person and a mannequin, which is, you know, the running joke. So they could have at least, you know, as a, you know, way to say, hey, we're not going to go all the way with this, left the HOV portion of it as it was. Tim, what is your thoughts on this?
Well, according to the data, 51% support the transportation sales tax, at least in the 10-county metro area. And even though that isn't a huge amount of support, it is still registered by a public that really don't know a lot about what's going on. They don't have a lot of information about it, but they're willing to try it anyway. And it makes sense because these are the people who fight the road system and these massive traffic jams down there every day. I personally, being a mountain guy, I don't see how they do it. But when you go talking about mass transit, we're talking about 57% supporting that as an answer. Well, Catherine, I want to throw a question to you. Why don't they just expand or extend MARTA out about 50 miles in every direction?
Because nobody wants to pay for it.
Ah.
Because nobody likes MARTA.
Would the cost be prohibited for that, or?
I don't know. I don't know how much the cost is, but see, the problem has always been that the way I understand it. Now, I haven't lived in it. I didn't live here when they were, you know, first negotiating all this. But, you know, in DeKalb and Fulton, we pay an extra penny sales tax for MARTA.
Uh huh.
But Cobb and Gwinnett and mostly Cobb and Gwinnett, probably Clayton, didn't want to pay that, and they didn't want MARTA extending in to their counties, you know, and there's a lot of suppositions about why that is, whether they didn't want those people coming into their counties, or they didn't want to, you know, raise their sales tax, or whatever the reasons are. So what bothers me about it is then we have Cobb Community Transit and Gwinnett Transit and Clayton Transit that they finance themselves, but it comes into Atlanta at no charge and hooks up with MARTA, which just drives me crazy. Whenever I see those Cobb Transit buses, I'm like, okay, you people, you're not paying the sales tax, but you're taking advantage of the MARTA that we built with our money. So I think it's a big political football. You know, there's always challenges. I mean, there's always complaints about the way MARTA is managed. There's always complaints about, you know, we don't want them coming into our county. It costs too much, whatever. But then ultimately people want, like you said, 57% want mass transit. So I think it's just, I mean, I can imagine that what they'll do is build some, you know, the Republicans, because they're in control, they'll figure out some way to make some additional mass transit that won't connect with MARTA, and it'll just be another big boondoggle, and it won't work. But it's better than building a tunnel under Atlanta like somebody wanted to do. Who was that? Was that Oxendine?
Yeah.
Well, they did that in Australia, the tunnel bypass.
Well, they did it in Boston, and it was a giant, you know, disaster.
Yeah. David, let me ask you something. The political angle here I'm talking about, you know pretty much what the Republicans passed on transportation with this regionalization little idea, going county to county and let people voting on the splots or whatever. Honestly, that's just not going to work, is it?
No, because it needs to be comprehensive, and that's the problem
right.
where
Right.
Everybody has their own bus system. You can do the bus system county to county, but you can't do the trains. And that's what I think interests people a lot more, because buses stop, and even if they might not be slow, people perceive them as slow and complicated, whereas the trains are